back to race relations, and as you look back now, the 1921 race riot, was that anything that you even knew in the early 60s, that it even happened? Because we were led to believe, I wasn't here, that it certainly wasn't talked about in school, it wasn't talked about in society. And here we had this racial unrest in the 60s. Nobody ever referenced the 1921 race riot?
Not particularly. And you're right, it wasn't taught in school, it wasn't a matter of conversation in the community. I don't think there was any kind of coordinated effort to sweep it under the rug, forget it, that sort of thing. It just happened that way. Consequently, a lot of people grew up in town never having heard of it. And it was, and remains to this day, the largest race riot by some methods of measurement in the history of the United States. It's one of those things that just kind of happened, and then you sort of have a community collective realization that how have we let this happen? How do we deal with this thing that went on and is a part of our history that we do not recognize and don't know anything about? So then there was a great turnaround, and Scott Ellsworth's book came out sometime in that period, which was probably still is the definitive work on the Tulsa race riot. Scott was Tulsa native. He was white, of course, but the book was the first of its nature that thoroughly researched the riot and what actually occurred. And publication of that book, as much as anything else, created an attitude within the community that, yeah, it's okay to talk about this and we should talk about this.
Back to the busing days. Do you remember a day when they began to integrate, say, Booker T. Washington, and the buses came? Were you a news person on the scene? Remember covering that?
That might be misunderstood, if you'll forgive me, John, by someone who draws no distinction between forced busing, which was what Tulsa was faced with because of a lawsuit that had been filed against the school system. Forced busing, which means that the law decides, that somebody decides, that you're going to take some black kids and move them over into white neighborhoods, and you're going to take some white kids and move them into black neighborhoods, and we're going to decide which ones go. That's forced busing. The busing I think that you're referring to is a situation where you set up a magnet school, which is what Booker T. is, Carver, and in order to get non-neighborhood people to go, in other words, in order to get white people to go, you set up a bus system to make it more convenient. But these are all volunteer whites that are coming in. It's quite different than forced busing. And what happened in terms of the history of magnet schools was that the lawsuit was filed. The court said that it's going to go ahead and grant what the plaintiffs want, which is going to be forced busing, unless you can come up with an alternative. And the alternative they came up with was the magnet school system. The crown jewel in that system turned out to be Booker T. Washington. It turned into a magnet school in 1975. The people who ran that were so afraid that they couldn't get white children to go into a black neighborhood. They got people like me and the mayor and three or four others, I think, go over there and teach classes. Come on. Those kind of people, what are they doing in a high school in an instructional thing? What they were doing was, what we were doing, I guess I should say, was that we were showing that it was okay to go. I taught a broadcasting class there for a year. We all taught, you know, Mayor taught civics or something, I don't know. And then they realized, of course, what they had on their hands was something that they had not anticipated in the least, which was they've got 10 times more white kids wanting to go there than they've got slots for it. So they kicked all of us out. I mean, I was happy to be relieved from that because I was just totally out of my element trying to teach in a classroom. I had no business there. So they kicked all of us out, and the school became one of the top schools in the country from an academic standpoint, measured virtually by any way you want to measure. Now, you can argue whether it has slipped from those early golden days or not, but the fact is that in its heyday, which is the first 15 or 20 years of Booker T. Washington, it was a remarkable, remarkable achievement.
I don't know if it needs to be stated, but we should say that Booker T. was a black school, and Dr. Bruce Howell was superintendent at that time, and so he was a leader of that, and Nancy McDonald was a volunteer to the education system, and the two of them were of great leadership in this.
Yeah, Nancy was, I suspect, a volunteer, but that is so short a description of what she actually did. Because more than any other person, in my view, she was the one who set the standards for that school. She was the one who got on the phone and encouraged her friends and got on the phone and encouraged other people to go and talk teachers into going there and had the vision necessary to see things like the International Baccalaureate program would start there, which still exists. If they're ever going to name the magnet schools after anybody, my nomination would be Nancy McDonald.
Yeah. Dr. Howell talks about taking one or two of the really sharp Booker T. Washington kids. They would just go into living rooms of white, southern, whatever direction of Tulsa, and this young man would come in and speak about how great a school it was. And he said he just put on a show. And white parents felt really good about, well, if this young man is there and that's the kind of blacks my children are going to be around, it helps sell the program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they pulled out all the stops on that and did a remarkably good job. And they had other people who were equally active in it. Aloha Kincaid, for example, Harvard educated and wife of a very successful attorney here in town. She met her husband at Harvard because they were both on the debate team. So she went over and single-handedly set up a debate program at Booker T., which resulted in national titles for high schools. So you had these various elements coming together to provide this wonderful learning situation for the children. And you had the feeling that it was something really exciting, something really new and innovative. You sort of lost track of the fact that 50% of the people were black, 50% of the people were white. Although it took a long time to get a white Mr. Hornet, long time. My youngest son, Dylan, who must have graduated 20 years ago or something, I don't know at this point, he was runner-up for Mr. Hornet, and that's the first time a white kid had gotten that far.
Explain Mr. Hornet.
Mr. Hornet's like the school king. You know, they had a corresponding female something or other.
I might mention that in this oral history library, both Nancy McDonald and Dr. Bruce Howell have been interviewed for the exact time period that we're talking about here. So for those of you who are interested in that, you can reference their interviews in this library.